Right, here we are again. Welcome, Vanguard. You are our favourite people in the entire world. We love you even more than our families, because our families don't pay money. They just take our money.
Your family don't pay money?
Well, actually, I think two of them are actually subscribers. So, which means that they're not all subscribers. Anyway, let's play the music.
Yep.
Number one from Jen. Greetings, second time emailer, and pleased as punch to be a member of the Vanguard Easter in the church's new location. You may remember me as the ambitious American who purchased an all-region Blu-ray player of questionable legality so she could watch bait. I've recently fallen down a let's watch highly rated lesser-known classic films rabbit hole. I love the cinematography and pacing of Earrings of Madame De. So I went on to watch Letter from an Unknown Woman by the same director, Max Ophuls. German director, died 1957. Both of these films really resonated with me. I'm looking forward to watching more of Ophuls' films. That's Ophuls, I would say. And would appreciate I would appreciate recommendations to other directors or films from that era that have complex, well-told stories. So we're looking, so that's quite specific, really. So he died in 57. So anything highly rated, lesser known classic films is, I think, what we're
I'm not sure what we mean by lesser known, because I mean, Max Ophuls.
If it's
Ophuls
a classic
is,
film, it's going to be quite well known, isn't it?
Well, yes. And I mean, also, you know, Max Ophuls is one of those directors who, if people are, you know, they're doing like Rossellini and, you know, it's one of the names that you just. Can I ask for an addendum to this? Who's this from?
Jen.
Jen, could you possibly be slightly more specific as to what you would like? And I will happily answer it. But at the moment, it's like I'm just gonna end up just citing Italian neo-realists and you know.
That's not a good take.
And I don't know that that's going to help much.
So, okay, Jen, we want a follow-up, please.
Yeah, and, you know, great German expressionists and you know. It's a bit like, seen any good films lately?
Yes.
So I'm sorry, I'm not criticising it. Thank you. I'm delighted that you found Max Ophuls, who is generally regarded as a poet of cinema. You know, like people will say Bresson. And I mean, that's more specific. More notes, Your Majesty.
He sounds like a packet of savoury snacks to be opened at a party.
Max Ophuls.
Yes.
Have you got, Max Ophuls?
Have you opened a bag?
Or medium Ophuls?
Yes. David says...
You did make the That's Ophuls joke, though, which is very good.
David says, bonjour, Asterix et Obelix. Mm-hmm. Whilst listening to into a radio show this week, the DJ played Precious Love by Otis Redding. It instantly transported me to the Guillaume Canet, François Cluzet film starring the fantastic Gilles Lelouch, Tell No One. Mm. Sorry, forgot to ask. Is there a song or piece of music that instantly transports you to a film, place in time, and so on?
Okay.
I'm a long-term listener from around 2000. I remember the show being interrupted to broadcast Colin Powell's lamentable justifications to take us to war. However, even though I don't remember Mark's review of the film, I do remember his joy that one of his favourite tracks of all time by Bono featured in the movie. I would be interested to know. I forget about that. Anyway, so is there a song or piece of music that instantly transports you to a film or place in time, etc.?
Yeah, well, in the case of Tell No One, weirdly enough, I was just thinking about this, and I haven't heard this email. Is the live version of Elkie Brooks's Lilac Wine, which plays out over the most extraordinary sequence in Tell No One. Tell No One is it came up because we were holidaying somewhere. It was a rented cottage, and there was a video of it on the shelf. And I said, wow, they've got it. You have to watch this film. It's great. Of course, nobody in my family listened. They didn't care. But what I did do was I went to Spotify, and I started playing the Elkie Brooks Lilac Wine, the live version. And I mean, I didn't need to watch the film. I mean, I love that film. I think that film is great. But it's the song that I would take from that is Lilac Wine.
This is from... Jared, yes, but not the most famous Jared, or even the second most famous Jared.
Very good, well done,
Mark and Simon. Part-time
never going to live that down.
Jared says, please forgive the slightly academic sounding phraseology here. Part-time filmmaker, admittedly part-time listener here, though no less a fan, once found myself unwittingly wandering from Finsbury Park to Hampstead Heath during a listen. After watching Ennismain a few days ago, I admit that much of the film felt lost on me. I couldn't really say what impression it had left, or if I'd even reacted to it. In your latest episode, Mark said something in his review of Tár, which encapsulated or provided a starting point from which to articulate my thoughts. Okay. Quote, I spent more time admiring the film than enjoying it. Rather than go into my reasons for this, I wonder if I can ask Mark a perhaps dumb question.
No such thing as a dumb question.
Are there any watching strategies he could suggest when seeing a more experimental film like this? It seems we're trained to read screen language in a fairly rigid way. For example, sudden shaky camera work in an otherwise quiet drama will alert us to impending chaos. In Ennismain, I was always trying to figure out the story behind the lead character's presence on the island and the phenomena she witnesses. Should I, for instance, ignore this urge to find narratives and focus on the sensations the film might evoke? Up with fellow Warwick alumni, very good, and down with more movie multiverse madness, also very good from Jared. Clearly a Warwick University student, they are always the finest. So, but interestingly, watching strategies, he puts that in inverted commas as though he's not sure that that's the right phrase, but is there a way of thinking, a way of being, a way of approaching movies like this which might render him more wise?
Okay, well, two things. First thing I'd say is I've just looked up Tell No One. According to the IMDb, the version of Lilac Wine in Tell No One is Jeff Buckley, but I absolutely have it in my head that it is the live Elkie Brooks version. So that's an interesting either memory or mismemory. As far as that, the question about preparation, I mean, let's take it...
Watching strategies.
Yeah. So... In the films this week, there is that film January. Now, as I said, there are two films called January. There's another one, which I believe is a Latvian coming-of-age movie, which I haven't seen. When I saw January, I did not know anything about it at all. I put it on. I was watching it at home. I was in Norway, and I started watching it, and it was immediately apparent that this was going to be, you know, it's not a Latvian coming-of-age movie. It's a sort of strange, experimental...
Bulgarian, Luxembourgish.
And I do have a couple of techniques, which are... And these relate specifically to seeing films at home, although I think you can do it in the cinema as well. First thing I did was I stopped the film and I did some background reading just to find out what area we were in. So I discovered that it was adapted from a play. I discovered that the script was written by somebody who had made this other film that I knew. I just gave myself a little bit of that the play was apparently about the disappearance of villages. The other thing I did was I found out how long it was. So I knew, you know, I had a sense of the overall shape of it. And I was in a hotel room and I sat up on a chair with a, you know, sort of firm back. And I had the laptop and I turned all the lights off in the film and I thought, okay, fine, because I don't know what this is going to be like, so I want to stay. And then actually it did draw me in. I have found that sometimes it's nice to stumble upon a film that you don't know anything about. But if you're specifically wanting to experience more experimental work, I think a little bit of preparation can help. I think it's getting yourself, finding out how long it is, getting yourself in a comfortable position in which, you know, you're not going to, you know, be distracted by other things, phones off and all that stuff. Or if you're in a cinema, make sure you're not distracted by your seating, you're not distracted by other people. And allow yourself to come down to the pace of the film. I think one of the reasons...
What does that mean?
Well, one of the reasons I really took a disliking to Bellatar's The Man from London was because the glacial pace of it was not good for 8:30 in the morning in Cannes on day four when I was knackered. Mm-hmm. And I do think that it's possible that if I watched that film again in a better frame of mind, I would have got more out of it than simply struggling to stay awake. In the case of January... Having, you know, done a little bit of prep, I mean, 3 minutes of prep on the internet, but a little bit of prep. I thought, okay, fine. And now, let's go.
Okay, so if Jared was going again to see Ennismain, maybe, let's assume he's watched Bait, which is why he's watching Ennismain, but look up everything about the film, where it was filmed, who the actors are.
Well, I was going to say, listen to an interview with Mark Jenkin, for example. Eleni Jones, who is a colleague of mine, had seen Enies Mane the first time and didn't like it very much, and then listened to an interview with Mark Jenkin talking about what he thought the film was trying to do, and she then found it a much more rewarding experience. Now, I know people sometimes don't like to do this. If you want to be surprised by plot twists and things, you don't really need to know much about the background of Top Gun Maverick. But there are other films where, I mean, bear in mind, in ancient drama, people would stand at the front of the stage at the beginning of the drama and tell you the plot of the film, of the play that you were about to watch, including the end. You know, it was, this is the tragedy of Romeo and Juliet.
Exactly. That's what the chorus do. They come on and tell you
precisely.
Everything.
So if you think that something is going to be a little challenging, there is no shame at all in just doing some prep. And it will help you enjoy, in my experience, it will help you enjoy the film.
Okay, so if anyone else has what Jared calls watching strategies, get in touch. We'll pick this up on Other Takes, correspondence@kirbynandmayo.com. Some schmestions here. Mm-hmm. Now, this could be a Kayla or Akala. I'm going to go with Akala.
It's Akala, isn't it?
Well, in Scout, it's Akala. But yeah. Top one there. Akala?
Okay.
Akala.
Okay.
Akala, I'm sorry if I've got your name wrong, but Akala is in East London. Dear friends, in your experience of being born near the middle of the last century, thanks, are things a lot worse these days? So there's a very, very interesting question.
That's a schmestion.
Yes.
Can I go first?
Okay, you go first.
I think that if you are a young person in today's world, it is a very, very challenging time. I think that young people today are facing a huge amount of mental health challenges. I think growing up in a world in which environmental catastrophe looks imminent is really, really hard. I also think being the first generation of people upon whom the internet and social media was basically experimented was rather like letting kids going and playing in the high street, in the road, and seeing how many of them arrived at the other side. So I think it can seem like it is we are in a particularly difficult time. I certainly don't think things were as tough when I was a kid as things are for kids now. But you?
I think things are a lot better.
Okay, please tell me why.
I mean, this is very broad brushstroke. There are fewer people starving today than at any other time in history.
Is that right?
For the first time, I mean, not that this is particularly a good thing, there are more people dying of obesity than there are of starvation. I remember reading this. There are fewer people dying through warfare and combat now than there were 30 years ago.
Okay. This is very encouraging.
I mean, a lot of this will boil down to a mindset, I appreciate. And an awful lot of this now will come from a riff that Malcolm Gladwell did on another podcast when he was talking to Jonathan Friedman.
Right.
And he says very clearly, if you pick up any history book, you will realize that life was a lot worse back then, whatever period of time you're going to. He said he's just been writing a book about LA for the black community in Los Angeles in the 1930s and 40s. He said for every one of the people that he looked at, life is better now than it was back then.
Okay, well, this is very encouraging. And I have to say, how great to hear this.
He says, for example, flight attendants. He does this big riff about flight attendants. In 1970, being a flight attendant was the most popular profession for women leaving high school. He said, so he says, imagine this. There are 700,000 people applying for, I think, 1,200 jobs. I was just scribbling this down. They have to parade in front of men who look at their vital statistics, who you have to be white. You have to be between 5'2" and 5'8". This is in 1970. I'm alive. You're alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is not ancient history.
No.
Life is better in every conceivable way. So then they go and they talk about climate change, which is clearly, you can go, yes, okay, well, all of that, but climate change.
The planet's on fire.
And this will boil down to a lot about the way you look at life and the way you look at politics. Malcolm Gladwell says, look at the arms race model.
Right.
Okay? There are the world's problems and there are the world's capacity to solve problems, which is accelerating faster. And then he says, I choose to believe that our ability to solve problems is accelerating faster. And then he uses vaccinations as his sort of first evidence.
Okay.
You know, that it took, so how long did it take to get a vaccine for polio? It didn't
take
a
decade, probably.
It didn't take, it took 50 years, I think. But how long did it take to get a vaccine for COVID when the whole world was trying to solve a problem? So a lot will boil down to, I mean, all of what you said was absolutely true. And I think all of what that I've said is right. I will need to go back and fact check about, I am right about the world being more peaceful. And I'm fairly certain that I'm right about fewer people starving.
Wow. I mean, that is extraordinary. And I that's actually very good to hear.
So he pays you money. Anyway, yeah. Gayla, thank you very much for the question. This is exactly the kind of stuff
that
Schmesches was intended for. Here's a great one from Julia in Boston. What is often incorrectly perceived as a sign of intelligence? I'm going to go first.
Go on.
Polo neck sweaters, often used to indicate that you're an intellectual.
Okay.
No, also you don't get away with it with that. I'm not talking to you. People with polo necks rarely get away with it. It just accentuates a flabby chin.
I think the thing that is most often mistaken for a sign of intelligence is the use of complicated words when simple words would be a lot more easy to understand. I am thinking of one particular writer who takes great pleasure in deliberately using words that he knows the reader will feel foolish.
Is it Salman Rushdie?
No. It's not.
Is it Will Self? It's Will Self. Okay. But to be honest, we all know people like that.
Yeah. And it's just shut
also,
up.
Going back to you, I'm going back to my university time. How extreme left you are does not indicate that you're brighter than someone who's a hardcore centrist.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Final question from Marcus in Czechia, in the Czech Republic. Which books have you pretended to read?
Oh, how long have you got?
I was struggling a bit. And then I remembered, again, back at university, Leviathan by Thomas Hobbes, a work of political theory, which I was thinking, I was sent this as a book list, as, the things to read before you arrive for your political theory course. And I bought my own Penguin paperback copy of Leviathan. Boy, it's a big beast. And I mean, come on, guys. You know, a summary on Wikipedia would have been fine in my opinion. This is the guy who, you know, this is life is nasty, brutish and short.
Yes.
This is where it comes from. And I'm afraid to my tutors, I pretended to read most of Leviathan by Thomas Hobbes.
Yeah.
And you?
The Fairy Queen.
We're back with Fairy Queens again.
Yeah, I didn't read The Fairy Queen.
Should you have done?
Yes.
Who wrote that?
Spencer. I think it's Spencer.
Spencer who?
No, Spencer Davis. It was one of the... It is
personal.
Spencer, isn't it? I'm now going to have to look this up.
Frank Spencer.
The Fairy Queen, Edmund Spencer. Yeah, thank you. So I had to... It's a poem, you know, it's an epic poem. I think epic poem is a polite word for what it is. And we had to read it for the course. I mean, we studied. I did an exam on it. I passed an exam paper on The Fairy Queen. I have not read The Fairy Queen. And more importantly, I'm not going to.
Yes. Anything else that you've pretended to read?
Oh, loads of stuff. I mean, most... If I gesture towards Dickens or, you know, chances are I'm bluffing.
Okay. It's the art of bluff, which
yeah,
we've... Which
yeah,
we've
yeah, yeah. No, I mean, certainly. I am really badly read. I mean, I have often said the fact that I have an English degree is a stunning indictment of the education system. I have read so little.
I would also, just going back to Akela's...
I'm not proud of it, incidentally.
Maybe there'll be a schmestion about this. I think there is a serious question, which is the internet. Has it been good for society or bad? That's a very interesting, ongoing question for which there is a... I think it's not been very helpful, is increasingly an opinion. But anyway, if you'd like to respond to any of this, if you've got any questions and schmestions of your own, we would love to have them for next week's Take 3. Send them to correspondence@kermanandmayo.com.